Well, the Park City Board of Education meeting yesterday in the studio to review what was discussed. I have Business Administrator Todd Hauber and School Board Member Aaron Grady. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start first with summer school teachers. They basically got a raise.
Yeah, so what we're looking at is we had discussions about compensation for what are called special assignment contracts, and summer school is one of those. And we had a system in place by which they were paid basically $25 an hour, and that was based on a rate from a few years back. It hasn't been updated, so we needed to take a look at that. But through discussions and conversations with the teachers and the administrators, we've come to the idea that we would pay base salary on a daily rate. And so the end effect is a pay increase for that assignment, plus others in the district as well.
What do you mean, and others?
So there are other opportunities for special assignments throughout the district, and so those will all be treated on that same basis.
Okay, so what this was being done just because we had problems securing the staff we needed during the summer?
Sure, there's always a challenge to bring people back during the summer, and pay is one of those challenges. Often teachers also want to have the break during the summer as well, but this was definitely one way to approach that and resolve it.
Okay. Substitute teachers also got a raise then as well?
Yep. We're looking at that as well. We had some challenges with the days of the week as to when people made themselves available. And Fridays and Saturdays. Mondays. Not Saturdays.
But yeah, Fridays challenge. And Mondays were harder for us to fill those substitute positions.
Right. People just taking a long weekend.
Yeah. And they're shorter days as far as early out on a Monday and also early out on Friday.
Okay. So again, they will receive how much?
So the substitute pay was equalized across the days of the week, and then we put a 12% increase on that pay. So it'll go from about 110 to 125.
Okay. And again, these don't have to be certified licensed teachers.
So that rate is the certified license, but you don't have to be a certified licensed teacher to be a substitute.
Okay. Tim McConnell also presented an update on changing some of the staff job classifications. Why are we doing this?
So about every 5 years, we go through a reclassification process anyway, just to make sure that the job titles and the job descriptions are staying pace with the rest of the marketplace. And so we were on that cycle. Last year, as we were putting budgets together, we also wanted to look at the salary increases as we got into the three-year contract that we're in right now. And one of the elements of that negotiation was also to make sure that we took that study in place and reviewed all of those positions. So the timing was right, and we had negotiated this.
Okay. There was no dollar figure associated with this, so you're bringing that back?
So at this point, we were looking at the job titles themselves to make sure we had the right job titles, right job descriptions for those job titles, and then went into the marketplace to see how those compared to other job titles in the marketplace. Phase two, if you will be to then put a price to that. How does that impact or affect the classified staff?
All right. So likely a budget increase.
I am assuming so. The question will be magnitude.
Yeah. So when does that happen? This budget gets approved?
Yes, definitely. So we're working on it this week. Hope to have recommendations to the board for their June 5th meeting.
All right. How many positions are we actually talking about?
So there were 60 titles reviewed, and about 11 of those titles have recommendations for lane changes. So that's the range there is 11 titles.
Okay. You heard from Interim Superintendent Dave Gomez, a presentation strongly advocating for hiring three new secondary school associate assistant principals. Did we decide that we're going to do that?
Yeah, we did. We voted unanimously to move forward with that in the budget.
So Park City High School, Ecker Hill, and Treasure Mountain?
Yes, all three.
Yeah, and why the need? Why the need? I mean, someone was telling me that the high school and junior high school are moving to a kind of a homeroom situation. So why do we need additional staff to do what will now be taking place in the...
Well, I think overall it's the increase that we've seen in several areas, in student supervision, safety, wellness, discipline, also... a significant increase in 504s. The assistant principals will also be there to help communicate with parents moving forward. And as far as ratios go, we are probably the top, not only in Utah for, like, I think we are at 1 to 400 right now. Mm-hmm. And average throughout kind of the Intermountain West is closer in the, like, low threes.
One to 320, yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, if you were to do the math for me, Todd, I mean, to get it down to, you know, one per low threes, I mean, what would that...
So that is an additional AP at each of those schools. That was the rationale as well, is getting back into the right range for that ratio.
So eight additional positions?
So it's three additional positions. So one at the high school, one at the junior high, and one at the middle school. The ratios we were talking about were the ratios of APs to students. So right now we're at that
one
AP to 400 students, and we want to bring that closer to the 1 to 300 range.
And that will do that?
Yeah, that will get us into that range, yep.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Gomez also had mentioned a lot of sports and activities, some 22 different, and somebody is needed to monitor that. What is he talking about here?
For staying after school with having somebody on the property. We have 22 of the high school athletics and then also 37 school clubs that meet after hours.
So in addition to a coach, we need another body?
An administrator in the building.
Yes. Yeah, so you have your chain of command on site. So you have the coaches working directly with the students and whatever the activities are. And then should incidents arise, we have our emergency response group and chains of command. And so you want to have that administrator available as well.
So this would be the assistant principal's?
Correct.
Yes.
New position then?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about just a lot of funds being diverted to special ed, tier two and tier three students. Have our needs really changed, or is it a whole different emphasis that the board's taking because there's more a concerted focus because of their children?
Well, and I think the needs have definitely shifted. We're also moving into this MTSS, the multi-tier system, and the needs have increased. I think right now with the numbers that we have, we're showing with one interventionist at the three elementary schools, only having the availability to give those kids that need the additional instruction an additional 7 minutes. So bringing in an additional interventionist to those elementary schools gives that much more time to each one of those kids that are in need and bringing a more equitable learning environment to our students.
Yeah.
And as we look at the interventionists, it's not so much a continuum of the special education. So the special education is its own realm, if you will, and the interventionists are just coming in to provide additional supports for students who may be struggling. So they haven't qualified for special education, and they may not even be ever categorized as special ed. They are just needing those additional supports in the classroom to be successful with the curriculum.
But they have been classified into the Tier 2 or Tier 3?
Correct, but those aren't special education designations. Those are just identification levels of what additional intervention should be brought in for that student to be successful.
So what's the difference then between special ed and...
So special education is a federal classification, and there are specific requirements or conditions or eligibility, if you want. I don't want to call it eligibility, but just conditions that you meet in order to receive those services.
With students with IEPs or 504s.
Correct.
Okay. So in addition to the three assistant principals, we're also hiring then four new interventionists. That board decided on that?
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk money then, Todd. You know, we've just mentioned maybe at least seven plus more positions here with the reclassifications. What's this all costing?
So right now we're in the $5.2 million to $6 million range at this point. Again, we still have some pieces to bring to the table with the job study results, but we're probably in that range, and we've been anticipating to be in that range for the last several months as we've looked at the positions.
So where are we with the budget then and the proposed tax increase?
So we're within a couple weeks of having that wrapped up. Again, June 5th, we'll finalize any of the last pieces, but I'll be presenting at that June 5th board meeting what that outlook will be on the tax impact, the additional revenues coming from the state, et cetera, to see what the full budget package will be.
So when we hire all these new positions here, that's something that we have to sustain from here on out, and then match the step and lane changes with that. So when we talk, let's talk a little bit about what you have proposed, as a preliminary tax increase.
I'm stumbling over my words trying to figure out the right way to answer your question. So at this point, we have a matrix, and it's essentially $18 tax increase on $100,000 of value for each $1 million that needs to come into the budget. So that was kind of a long way to get somewhere, but that's so we're looking at somewhere between $5 and $6 million increase. So if you take that 18, multiply it by 5 or 6, that's kind of the tax impact that we're looking at, a little over $100 in that scenario.
Per $100,000.
Yes.
$1,000 worth of valuation. So that's something, again, that we have to sustain. So, I mean, how where does that money come from next school year?
Oh, so the tax increase actually is self-sustaining into the long term. The piece that we have on the 3-year contract is another $1.3 million next, or the school year thereafter. And so we've been using fund balances to get us to that point. And then there is the very real prospect of increasing taxes in that subsequent year as well. And we've been talking about a 2-year cycle in those tax increases for the past several months.
Yeah. So, I mean, is that something that you've kind of built out into the future? I mean, do you foresee budget tax increases?
Perpetually?
No, not
forever. We look at a 5-year time horizon to identify the sustainability for the school district. And last year's budget, as we adopted it, we had already forecasted that the 3-year contracts and positions brought on board at that time would require 2 years' worth of tax increase. We were going to time those tax increases with the compensation increases at each of those junctures of the contracts. So this was a contemplated idea so that by year 5, we're balanced. We're in a sustainable situation. We have sufficient revenues for all the commitments that we're making at this time, as well as last fiscal cycle.
Okay. And then the board is also going to be hiring a new safety coordinator?
Correct.
Yes, so we'll be posting that position, I believe, today.
Yep.
Yes, and that person will oversee all the safety measures at the school moving forward.
Okay. Now, we've got now assistant principals. Why do we need one more person?
Well, I think this person is strictly to oversee the implementation of all of the safety going into the school moving forward. The safety within the school is overseen by the administrators, but this is district-wide.
Mm-hmm. My understanding is that the high school and Treasure Mountain already have a safety person, Kevin Orgel.
So Kevin isn't just strictly safety. He also works with the ISS, or the in-school suspension programs, and has other duties assigned to him as well. So he's not the dedicated safety coordinator. He has been helping us maintain all of our drills, making sure that the drills are happening on time. You know, clerical side of the safety system. This position would obviously pick up those responsibilities, but also take on the additional ones of reviewing buildings and protocols and making sure that annual updates take place on those protocols.
Yeah. Any concern from the board, Aaron, as we hear Todd talk about tax increases, at least for the next couple of years, about whether or not we get a bond passed?
Well, I think we're hopeful to get all of our ducks in a row first, to get that bond passed and getting our superintendent in here and making sure that we do our due diligence through the process to move that forward. So I think we're very hopeful.
And any updates with regard to the master plan?
So we have our executive committee pulled together. They'll be meeting. We've been meeting, and we have another meeting on Thursday. We're right on the threshold of putting out the invitation for the steering committee to be formed. So we'll put an advertisement out and invite the community to come forward and be part of the steering committee. And it'll be a pretty heavy-duty job. They're going to go into the nuts and bolts of everything. help us through the community conversations, making sure we're getting the word out, bringing the word back in, and helping in all of that. So that's, we're going to be kicking that off here really quick. Thursday we'll finalize all of that. And then we'll be putting together the RFP. We have it drafted. We'll have the executive committee review it for the master planner vendor itself. So right now we have our owner rep helping us through the process. This will actually be the firm that will take us through every conversation.
Yeah. Any news in terms of when we will hear an announcement on the new superintendent?
Well, we did our final interviewed two finalists this past weekend, and both candidates were approved by the 12-member community committee and the board. So we're kind of in the process right now with our consultants going through the due diligence. So I think maybe fingers crossed we should have an announcement maybe by the end of this week.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite?
I definitely had one that I leaned a little bit more towards, yes.
Mm-hmm. Was there some consensus with the board, or you
I
guys?
I definitely think there's some consensus with the board, yeah.
So
we all feel very good.
So an offer hasn't even been made at this point?
No, it has not. We're still doing our due diligence. We want to make sure we're dotting those I's and crossing those T's.
Yeah, anything in particular you're looking for?
I think we're looking for a great leader to bring our school district up to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing with the due diligence.
No, just any red flag. Just any red flags.
Which would be?
You name it. I think it could be anything that could come up, but we just want to make sure that we get the right partner with this and the right leader to come in for the district.
And I understand the school board is planning to attend graduation in full regalia, so this is something different. Why do we make this decision?
I'm not so sure all of us are. I think there's a few of us that will definitely be there. But I'm not so sure all of us can make it.
With the caps and gowns and all of that?
I'm not sure we get to have the caps and gowns. I think, Lori...
I think there's an effort to get
it. There's an effort to get it, but I don't know if that will happen for sure.
Okay. So that's just something different, and you wouldn't know because this would be your first graduation.
It's my first graduation.
Board member. But Todd, any insight into that?
We're just looking to celebrate the students and doing it in first-class fashion.
Okay. Anything else you two wanted to add?
Appreciate the time this morning.
Okay.
Yes, thanks,
Todd Halber,
Leslie.
Aaron Grady, thanks. Park City Council has a lengthy agenda tomorrow in the studio to preview some of the many items. I have City Manager Diane Foster, Community Development Director Anne Laurent, and Special Events Manager Jenny Dearson. Good morning.
Good morning, and we have yet again set a new record of 27 items on the agenda. The last meeting was 26.
Oh, wow.
And we're not doing it on purpose, or I think Council might be.
First, Diane, Council spent an hour in work session reviewing the 5-year capital improvement plan. $9 million have been identified in cuts. Will the Council be asking for more to reduce that bond below $55 million?
I think this will be a really interesting discussion. City Council and staff are very focused on getting the treasure bond as low as reasonable. And what I mean by reasonable is we've heard from the community that they don't want us to take money out of the affordable housing program. As you know, we have $40 million for that. We actually need, with the current target of 800 units, that would mean we'd need $101 million, and that's at today's housing prices. So we'll be looking at that very seriously. Staff has already identified about $9 million in cuts that can be made. Some of those are deep. Council Member Worrell and Mayor Bierman are talking to the seniors today because it may be cutting the community center, and they're going to talk to them about other opportunities staff has investigated for where we could put them. So we are looking to make serious budget cuts, also while not making budget cuts that won't be smart. If you cut road money, for example, and Old Town improvements and roads are on the list, and if you do that, it will cost the community more in the future, right? Whenever you do that kind of infrastructure, you don't maintain it.
Will any polling be done to get an idea of whether residents would support a $50, $55 million bond? Because I know in past open space bonds you've done, that has been done, and people, you lose a lot of support.
We are planning a lot of community meetings, and those will be coming up in the pretty soon. Matt Dias and Linda Jager and Nate Rockwood have been working on that. And so we do plan on having a number of community meetings and a lot of opportunity for feedback during this budget process. As you heard Mayor Bierman say, when we first announced the possibility of, and the voters having a decision about the treasure bond, that we wanted to discuss this during the capital project. The other important piece is, the other piece that has already been taken off the table in addition to the Brew Pub Plaza is our public utilities facility, which was a $20 million project. Now, we only had part of the money in the budget because we weren't sure how we could make the whole 20, but the part of it that was in the budget is part of the contribution to treasure.
Okay, so more than 9.5 then. What did you have set aside for
that? That's actually part of the, I believe that's part of the 9.5. I think we had
six for the Brew Pub.
Right, and $4.5 million for the community center set aside. And I think it was a little bit further out in the capital budget. I don't have the exact number with me.
Okay. Real quick, the Bonanza Flat planning update and review of the draft. This spells out prohibited uses. My understanding, a big crowd tomorrow, concerned, because I've had a couple phone calls on it already, concerned that the city is taking away access to those living in Brighton Estates by prohibiting motorized vehicles. Is that true?
That's not the intention. And it is important to know that as staff and council members have been working with Utah Open Lands on this, one of the things we've realized recently, and actually I was talking to Heinrich the other day, staff has been saying all along, it's very important that we get the conservation easement and the management plan done before this summer. We were hoping to adopt it in May. Now we're looking at June for adoption. It was super busy up there, and as Wasatch County Manager Mike Davis reminds me, if you listen to Mike, you'd think there was never a car up there before we bought it, but we do believe that there has been an increase now that people know about it and they know there are trails and they know it's not private property. We want to make sure that we have the appropriate parking and bathrooms, and they won't all be done this summer, but we need that management plan and the conservation easement. We need to focus on that, get that done, so we're doing things that are appropriate and we're protecting the land. The most important part is protecting the land. So it includes stuff like dogs on trails, but not dogs they have names for all the areas. It's basically the area. It's a primitive area like wilderness.
Front country and back country.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. But again, back to the whole Brighton Estates things. I mean, because snowmobiles or motorized vehicles are prohibited, at least on your property, that means that those living in Brighton Estates still will have access?
So what we want people to do, the intention is they could drive on the road now. Right. If they cut across the Bonanza Flat property, it is shorter. Now, some people have talked about it being it's possibly safer. What we want to make sure we're doing is first focus on the management plan and the conservation easement, and then sit down with Brighton Estates residents. What happened was we ended up in these huge and long conversations that ended up being taking away from the time that we were spending on conserving this property. So I believe in talking to some of the council members, I believe there's a willingness in the management plan, and these two work together, and there aren't a lot of properties that we have both the management plan and the conservation easement. They're important because the management plan allows for some flexibility. So as we'll sit down later with the folks on access, we can always, in the management plan, allow for some designated snowmobile corridors if it's deemed that the road may be unsafe in winter.
Okay. So again, this comes back. It'll be discussed, and then it'll come back after you get the input. It'll be tweaked a little bit more and come back for final
Very much approval. So. So this is not the end. And right now we're targeting sometime in June to adopt it, but not and the public will have an opportunity. I do want to let folks know council does not plan on having an access discussion tomorrow because of the importance of getting the bathrooms up there and the parking, et cetera.
Okay. And four trails will eventually be built, all with parking and restrooms.
That is the hope and intent. And Heinrich Dieters and our Logan Jones and Mayor Andy Bierman have all been working on this directly with our partners as well. And Utah State Parks, we don't want to burden their facilities. So we need to make sure. And we did put restrooms up there last year, and the only challenge was some of them got pushed off the ledge.
Okay. Jenny, staff is recommending that the council approve the 9 dates for Park City Institute's Big Stars Bright Nights series. All of the concerts to be held at Quinn's Sports Complex with the exception of July 13th, which will be at City Park. So where in City Park?
So we are looking at the north end of City Park for that concert. We've held several events, whether it's been 4th of July or the women's rally that we had back in January, and do find that that is a key location to hold a crowd of that size. I think it's really important to mention, while this is a Level 3 event, both at Quinn's or at City Park, the estimated attendance is about 2,500. So this isn't something to the scale of perhaps 4th of July or Sundance or Arts Fest. This is a concert with 2,500 people. And we have worked really closely with the Park City Institute, as well as staff and our jurisdictional partners. And we do have an operational plan that we are pretty close on bringing to completion. But really, at this point, find that we can mitigate the impacts and want to go ahead and move forward with approving the locations. I think that that'll be a huge benefit to the Park City Institute. And we're looking forward to this one this summer.
Yeah. So the north end, are we talking softball fields?
Softball fields and kind of the rugby fields in that area.
Okay. So, I mean, is it a free-for-all? I mean, there's no – how do you
– So we will end up, just like out at Quinn's, we will end up fencing the venue. I think with any location, you know, whether it's out at Quinn's, City Park, or even, to be fair, up at Deer Valley or any other concert venue, there are people that will likely hike by or be up on the mountain. And so we're aware of that. But again, the ticketed seating will be at City Park. And we will also be working on an access plan for residents in the City Park on that July 13th concert.
Okay. And then food trucks and porta potties get brought in?
That's all part of the operational plan. And yes, those will be there.
Yeah. How did you mitigate your concerns for the traffic near US 40 and access to the hospital?
So one of the most important things for the Quinn's Junction area, it will be transit. Park City Institute will be procuring that transit and likely will be using both Richardson Flats as well as the high school for transit to the Quinn's Junction area. There will be very limited parking on site for Quinn's. We will ensure maintaining access to the hospital and also to the ice rink and NAC. And we do want to make sure that, you know, some trail users or those that need to go to the dog park can still have access and use those facilities out there. It's a very delicate balance. We have had some other major events out at Quinn's where we've had shuttles, and so we understand how things have worked out there before. This is also an opportunity to try some new things, and so I'm excited to see where we go with this one this summer.
Okay. What about start times? Because I had heard at one point that you were asking the Institute to start an hour earlier just to so we didn't have, especially on those symphony dates.
Right, and I think that that's an important point. As we are looking at the overall balance of the calendar, looking at potentially changing some of the times is a possibility, and that really has to do a lot about transportation impacts and mitigating them. We are working through those things, but that could be a tool that we use to mitigate some of those transportation impacts.
Okay. And then, Ann, a few ordinance changes amending the land management. How will these changes impact those in the construction business, development business?
Well, I wouldn't say these are focused on construction or development. They're more focused on affordable housing and then just some clarity so anyone's using the land management code, there isn't any concerns or inconsistencies on how we apply it. But the major one is replacing the affordable housing MPD because it hasn't been used in many years, including by the city, but primarily because of the way the parking works. And so we're looking at a better, more usable start. I don't think it's the end of the discussion. I think this is the first step to build a platform to maybe go a little further with it down the road. But it's looking at not as strict parking requirements, density bonuses based on the percentage of how many affordable units are in the development and then what percentage of affordability they are. So there's two factors to that. And then there's also parking exceptions for units under 500 square feet up to a certain cap.
And since the city is the only one building affordable housing, that's basically just as I've told Bruce, you're just basically, you know, greasing the wheel here.
With one exception, the city council at their retreat back in March really wants the city to look for private developer partners to do affordable housing projects in the future, especially if it includes rentals. And so this is an opportunity where the city owns land. We could this gives us a better framework for going out to seek proposals, and we actually know what that framework might be rather than saying we'll consider it, but you have to go through our processes to really know what you are going to be able to do.
Okay. But I guess, well, I'm not going to get into that. But I mean, I know, you know, when others were building affordable housing that they had complaints, but it just seems interesting now that we're changing it when it's a critical priority. It wasn't a priority until the city wanted to do it.
Well, and there's by no means is this going to overcome the, you know, if somebody owns a piece of land and they want to do a market rate development, this is not going to come overcome the financial difference between those. The Planning Commission did a nice job. They raised issues and Hannah Tyler, our planner, really led a good discussion about what ifs about height and all those things that we've evaluated in the past. So I wouldn't say we haven't talked about those things in the past. I would say that we're trying to take a little bit more of a bite-sized approach to getting back to some of the conversations we had about height and density to try to not blow up, though making progress on being enabling affordable housing.
Okay. And then, Diane, finally, an $82,000 contract to install bollard sleeves, or are we actually putting in these big, giant bollards there at Lower Main Street?
Staff's looked at all kinds of different versions, including hydraulic ones that drop into the road. Those are super expensive, and they're tough in winter. The ones we're doing is to we'll be putting in the bollards as well as the base for them. Now, a lot of these bollards won't be there permanently. They'll just have a base, but it has to go pretty far down in the ground, so if a car were to hit it, it couldn't be moved. Staff has worked out a plan that these can be stored close by, and they can be put up for events.
Basically screwed in or something? Or?
They get locked down, actually, with a padlock. And the one of the things that is good about this, in addition to safety, is that currently these are spots where for any event, like on Main Street, they have to put police cars in the places that these bollards would be. So it's actually, there is some cost reduction in this. I wouldn't say it's significant. The most important part is that it's about community safety.
Okay, I need to leave it there. Ladies, thank you. Board of Education held a public input session to get input on how to address growth. In the studio with details on that and other items, I have the superintendent of the South Summit School District, Shad Sorensen, along with business administrator Kip Bigelow. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I guess the news is that the board has decided that any bond election will be postponed till at least November 2019.
Yes, at this time they are planning definitely to do a bond in 2019. Of course, things can change. And what they have done in the recent past is spending some time identifying where we will be, that concept beginning with the end in mind, and looking at 2050 and envisioning based on enrollment projections what schools we will need and where they would like them. And so they started with that concept, and now they are working back. And because of the time and the need to educate our community and the stakeholders, the board felt waiting a year would be in the best interest of the community.
Earlier this month, though, the board did reconsider a motion for approving a bond for an elementary school for this year. So that's also off the table?
Yes. Like I say, in the 2050 plan, we envision that there will be an elementary school in Francis and there will be a new high school in Camas. The board is trying to work with the community and determine which is in the best order to do first. Because the high school is the higher price ticket item, it relieves pressure in all of the schools. But until the community grows a little bit more, there's debate on whether to go with the lower priced building and wait until the growth can help sustain and support the bond for the high school.
So what did you hear last week? Anything new or different?
Fortunately, we were able to hear from both sides, those that felt strongly that an elementary school should be the model. We heard from previous board members that had purchased land many, many years ago with the concept of neighborhood elementary schools and felt that that vision should be continued. We also heard from those that strongly believe in the benefits of a high school and what that could do for the community and for learning. And so, again, there is a community that has strong feelings on both plans, but recognize we need to do something for growth.
So what do you do for the next two or three or four school years? I mean, as you wait, you really couldn't start building based on this till at least 2020 and then have a building maybe 2021.
Exactly. Portables will probably be an option that we will need to consider. We have already efficiently tried to take classrooms and divide them up in the high school and look for other learning spaces. And basically, you have to get very creative. We do have the Silver Summit Academy, which has taken some pressure off of the buildings in Camas. And so we anticipate that that will continue to help a little bit as well.
Did you finally get that open?
Finally, we did.
Yeah.
And so we invite everybody to please stop by and say hi and take a chance to look at it.
Yeah.
We will have an official ribbon cutting in August.
All right. And then is that a kind of a year-round building, or is that only during the school year?
Right. Because the learning is structured to be online and also face-to-face, they do have an extended calendar. Eventually, it will probably come to where it's open from August 1st to June 30th. Right now, they will finish up in mid-June.
Okay. So in terms of the bond decision, I mean, you basically just move forward with master planning from here?
Yes, we do.
And then just logistics of getting kids in a building of some sort or a trailer?
Correct.
For next school year. Yeah. Have you approved a budget for the coming school year, Kip?
We're still working on that budget at the current time. Budgets are due by June 22nd. I hope to have information available for the board on their first meeting in June that they can review those numbers and make any final recommendations.
Are we talking about any tax increases here?
Not at this point. I think the budget will sustain itself at least for another year, and I don't anticipate any tax increase.
Yeah, and in terms of what you're budgeting for growth, what are we looking at?
Well, we continue to put money into our building reserve fund to help us with this bonding issue. The growth in students, along with that comes money from the state formula that helps fund those. And there will be probably an increase in the overall budget because of salary increases and those type of things. But again, with the increase in the state money, tax money, we should be able to sustain that without any type of a rate increase.
So we're just talking salary increases, just the step and lane changes that would happen no matter what?
Well, we'll honor the step and lane changes. I think the board has approved that. The big issue still on the table, and we have not finished negotiations, is what will be the cost of living increase on the salary schedule. We meet with the associations again tomorrow afternoon, and hopefully we'll start finalizing some of those numbers. And those are some of the things that are still outstanding in order to complete the budget for next year.
Yeah, have negotiations gone well, or are they on the antagonistic side?
They're going well. Both sides freely, expressing their needs and desires, and I feel very optimistic.
All right. Any big capital projects planned for the summer?
This summer, we will be working on some security issues in each of our schools, and that will probably be the major capital project. Along with that, as we did our master planning process a year or two ago, we identified specific needs in each of the buildings, and we're trying to move forward with that. Just last week, the board approved for a new construction manager, general contractor, and we hope to still meet this week and get them up to speed and start some of those projects immediately.
Yeah, so what are you doing with regard to the safety projects?
We have some exciting plans. We were one of the first and innovative school districts to have cameras on the outside of our buildings and to keep the doors locked, and that was happening in all of our schools. What we would like to do is make it so that our community check in with the front office before they have an opportunity to enter into the rest of the school. So we will be putting up some walls or structuring things so that, first of all, they're checked at the front gate or front door before they come into the school, and then they check in with the office and get their appropriate credentials before entering the rest of the school.
Okay. When's graduation?
It is next Thursday.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to recognizing our students. Last night we had a scholarship gala, and we were able to award $39,500 to students. And then this coming week, their other scholarship offers will come in, and we'll be able to see what the average offer was to our students. Last year it was close to $10,000 per student, so that was exciting.
Yeah. How many kids you got graduating?
That is a good question. I think it's right close to
close to 100.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just shy or over.
Okay. All right. And they're going all over? I mean, many of them moving on to college? Or
absolutely. Our counselors do a great job in tracking where they are going, and most stay within state, but we do have some that are planning to go out of state as well.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I think we're good.
Okay. All right. Shad Sorensen, Superintendent of South Summit Schools and Business Administrator Kip Mugel. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.